We're doing Megillah. We're up to the fifth page, Daf Hey, Amud Aleph, and we made it to the Mishnah. The Mishnah begins with a query. Ezohi Ir Gdola. What constitutes a big city? Kol Sheyeshva Asara Batlanim. Any city that has 10 people who are batel, who take off from work for the sake of ensuring that there's a minyan present. The Talmud tells us that whenever there's going to be a set minyan at a set place, God precedes the minyan. God comes before they come and waits. And then, let's say they show up, 9 of them show up, but one of them is out buying a beer. So God says, Madua ba'ati, why have I come? Ve'ein ish. And that one man ain't here. They don't have a minyan. God says, well, let's see what he's up to. And they zoom in on Mr. So-and-so. And then God says, because of you, they don't have a minyan. I came before all of you. You guys aren't here. So because of that, Reuben, we just started. You're joining us? No, okay. But your presence is missed. We're waiting your return. So the Mishnah says that those cities that could afford to fund 10 people who would be there, so that the Shekhinah would never have a situation where the Shekhinah was there getting upset because the minion isn't there, and that's a big city. Lachot mikam, less than that, areiz ekfal, that's already a village. Okay, so we ended the first concept of the Mishnah. Understood? You guys got it? Okay, now let's read it again.
I have a quick question on this.
Go ahead.
So it's 10 unoccupied guys or 10 unemployed guys or whatever. Do they have
I didn't say that. I didn't say what they said. I said something different.
You said that 10 people designated for that.
And funded to be there at that time.
Do they have to be in a specific locale or can they be spread out to
place,
the city?
No. They have to be at the shul, at the place where we will have minyan.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let's reread the Mishnah. Ezohi Ir Gdola. Which is she? Ezo, which is he, she, Ir Gdola, the big city. How's your Hebrew? You guys get what the word Ezo and he mean?
Yes.
Ezo means which. It means the Mishnah is contemplating two. Whenever you have Ezohi, it means to the exclusion of something. It's what's called, in Talmudic terms, a miut. Ezohi, miut. You come to exclude something. What are we excluding? Which is she, the big city? She, as opposed to something else. Meaning I was contemplating at least two, and I came to exclude something. I don't know what yet. Maybe in the Talmud I'll discover it. Maybe not. But whenever I read the words Ezohi, playing the word miut should ring in my head. I've excluded something. This Mishnah has just come to exclude something. Till here you're together? We all together? Good. Answer. Kol. Bam. What does the word kol mean? All that. Riboy. It's coming to include something I wouldn't have thought is included in a big city. When I'm coming to define, my definition will exclude something I would have thought should be included. And when I begin with the word call in the definition, I'm telling you, and guess what? My definition will include something you would have thought is not included. Call is a ribuy. It's coming to encompass. And the lawyer here will back me up. It's true but in law too. It's true in law. I can show it to you. It's a true way of defining law. It's a way of defining. It's logic. It's our tradition. It preceded the law books. But it appears in law as well. If he doesn't know it, I'll show it. I have it written. So, Ezohi, which is, it's going to excluding something else. Now, in my definition, I said all of that. Now I'm going to include something you would have thought not included. Baruch Hashem. Kol tov. Naul? Back to our Mishnah. Ezohi Ir Gdola, which is the big city. Call all sheyesh ba'asara batlanim. Now you guys have to get used to having these things ringing in your minds.
Yeah.
Okay? Slowly. When I'll say, next time we read a Mishnah, I'll say, Ezohi miut, you'll understand what I said. Kol, Riboy, you'll understand what I said. Now you guys know the terminology. Slowly, you get used to it. Let's continue. Pachot mikan, less than that, less than this. Harei ze kfar, that is a village. Okay, period. Now we've really concluded our topic of the first Mishnah, and now we move on to the next topic. We discussed the times at which the Megillah could be read. What happens if Purim falls out on Shabbos? What happens if the villages need to read? What happens if the 15th falls out on Shabbos? We always said we precede the reading. We make it earlier. Says the Mishnah, Be'elu, with regard to these times of the reading of the Megillah, Ameru, our sages said, Makdimin velo me'achrin. We proceed and we do not delay. You guys ready for some depth? Yeah? Okay. Whenever you have dual terminology like this, Makdimin velo me'achrin, you proceed and do not delay, you have to ask yourselves, did I just read one concept or two? One rule or two. I understand that if I proceed, I'm not delaying. So when the Mishnah bothers pointing out that you proceed and don't delay, is the Mishnah telling me one halacha or two? Okay? Back to the Mishnah. Aval, but... Now we're going to discuss things in halacha, dates in halacha, that when they fall out on a Shabbos or on a problematic time, we will delay them and not proceed them. Each one for their own reason, which the Gemara will explain. Aval, zman atzei kohanim. For now, we'll leave that undefined. The time that the kohanim would donate wood. We'll give a better definition as we proceed. V'tisha be'av, and the ninth of Av. So we delay it. We make the ninth of Av on the 10th. No smiles? You can't make the ninth of Av on the 10th, right? Okay, what does it mean? It means if the fast of the ninth of Av falls out on a Shabbos, you don't say, okay, we'll go back to the 8th of Av or the 7th of Av, but rather you bump it forward to the 10th. Chagigah, the Chagigah sacrifice. We just learned the Mishnah and Beitzah that you could bring Chagigah sacrifice on Yom Tiv. But what happened, right, Beis Hillel? You remember the Mishnah? Huh? But what happens if Yom Tiv falls out on a Shabbos? Now you cannot. So when can you bring the Chagigah sacrifice? The day before? It's not yet Yom Tiv. You can't do that. That's the Shlomim we had in the Mishnah, right? That's Shalmei Chagigah, the Shlomim of the Chagigah. So the Chagigah sacrifice, you cannot do earlier, the day before Yom Tiv. You'll have to do it the next day. On Chol HaMoed. Yeah? You can't do it the day before Pesach. You do it first day Chol HaMoed. You can't do it the day before Sukkot. Do it first day Chol HaMoed. You can't do it the day before Shavuos. You do it first day Chol HaMoed. You guys awake or sleeping?
Yeah.
Bet Shemai said you could go before. You start a little bit.
Bet Shemai said you do the smicha the day before.
And then you.
And then do it on Yom Tov, right? That was Bet Shemai.
Can't do it on Shabbos anyway, so no.
Can't do it on Shabbos anyways, right?
Okay.
But there is no Chol HaMoed for Shavuos.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the Mishnah. The hakel. The truth is, it's not your fault. You're learning so many new concepts at one time. You can't be testing me or thinking, did what I say make sense? You're still trying to absorb what I'm saying. It's not fair. I should play games like that. Okay. The hakel. I was hoping you'd realize, and then okay.
Yeah.
The hakel. What? The last mitzvah of the Torah is hakel, right? The Torah says, once every 7 years, all the Jews gather at the Temple Mount, and the king reads from the Torah. That gathering of the Jews on the Temple Mount in Sukkot is called Hakel. Why? Because the Torah says, Hakel, gather the Jews. Hakel etam, gather the Jews. The men, the women, the children, everyone gather, and then the king will read to them from the Torah. So that's why the mitzvah is called Hakel, because that's what it means, gather them. That's what God told Moshe. So, let's say that falls out on Shabbos. Any one of these, the day the Kohanim would have to donate their wood for the altar, for the temple, Tisha B'Av, the Chagigah sacrifice on Yom Tiv, Hakel, if any of them fell out on Shabbos, Me'achrin, we delay it, the Lo Makdimin, but we don't bring it earlier. Same question, you guys remember, right? Two rules or one. And then Talmudic terms, we say it in Yiddish. Svei dinim, is this two dinim? Is this two rules what we just read here? Svei dinim. Svei dinim means two. Is this two halachos? Is it two laws? We ended that, right? So what did we see so far in the Mishnah? We said big city is defined as to whether they could fund 10 people to be there for Minyan. B, we said when it comes to the reading of the Megillah, if it falls out on Shabbos, we'd read it earlier. But there are other things where we delay, we would not make them earlier. Till here we're all together?
Yep.
Okay, now back to the Megillah. Afal pi shameru makdimin velo me'achrin. Even though our sages said we have to precede the reading of the Megillah, we do not delay it. Mutarin be'espedu tani tumatanot la'evyonim. That date is still permitted. You're allowed to eulogize and fast and give gifts to the poor. That date that you proceeded to does not get all the laws of Purim. You're still permitted to be sad on that day if necessary. Eulogize the dead. On Purim, we wouldn't eulogize the dead. If Purim fell out on Shabbos and you had to move Purim up to Friday or Thursday, depending if you go like Rebbe or not, so that earlier date which you're celebrating Purim on is not really the full-fledged Purim. And you would be permitted to eulogize if necessary, permitted to fast if necessary, and on that earlier date we do give the gifts to the poor. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai. Whenever you encounter Rabbi Yehuda saying Eimatai in a Mishnah, the Talmud tells us a rule. Rabbi Yehuda, only Rabbi Yehuda. We have a rule about Rabbi Yehuda. Whenever he says Eimatai in the Mishnah, Eimatai literally means when is this so? He is coming to explain and not disagree. Only Rabbi Yehuda. The other ones, sometimes they disagree, sometimes they explain. Rabbi Yehuda not in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda in a Braisa that the Talmud will quote, and then he says Eimatai. Sometimes he agrees, sometimes he disagrees. But Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, when he says Eimatai, he's coming to explain and not disagree. Okay? Now only Rabbi Yehuda that's called plainly Rabbi Yehuda. If it says Rabbi Yehuda ben Tabai, Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Yehuda ben so-and-so, that's not this Rabbi Yehuda. Who is this Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi. Whenever it says Rabbi Yehuda plainly in the Mishnah, that's Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Eloi. Okay? Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said Eimatai, and now we all know what Eimatai means in the Mishnah when said by Rabbi Yehuda. When is this so? Makom shenichnasin b'sheni uvechamishi. If you have a place that people go in on Monday and Thursday, that's when we say you go earlier, but you don't go later. You have alternate dates to go earlier too. Aval makom shenichnasin lo b'sheni velo b'chamishi. But if you have a city where the villagers are not coming in on market day on Monday and Thursday, in korino ta'ela bizmana, one may not read the Megillah other than in its set date on the 14th. We do not have the leniency of going into market day, and this should be familiar to you because we already had this quoted a daf ago. The Talmud quoted this quote from the Mishnah.
So what are we learning? What are the two halachot? What are the two halachot?
Oh, it's a good question. First of all, we said it's not necessarily that.
Okay.
But it might be that. What are the two halachot? We will see in the Talmud. The Talmud will explain, if you notice. Now that you've noticed the question, you will notice that the Talmud addresses 2 points. A, why makdimin? B, why lo me'achrin? Why do you proceed and why don't you go forward? Meaning the Talmud will address both. Now that you're aware that the Mishnah told you two things, you will notice in the Talmud that the Talmud will address both. If you just read through the Talmud, you wouldn't notice it. Now that you've read it, now you understand, you'll notice. Okay?
Yep.
Fair enough? Let's see. So, do we need to review that? No, I think we're okay. Yeah, can we go on to the Gemara? Okay. Tana. We have a Tanaic quote. And it's not a Mishnah. If it were a Mishnah, it would say Tnan. Very often Tana is a Tosefta, but Tana is definitely not a Mishnah. It's a Tanai quote, either a Braisa or some other Tanai quote. Asara batlanim shebebet haKnesset. When our Mishnah said that one must have 10 batlanim in order to constitute a big city, so you guys correctly questioned, where do those 10 have to be? Tells us the Gemara, we mean 10 in shul. What is the Beit HaKnesset? It comes from the word kinus, the gathering, the place where the Jews gather for prayer. The halacha says, the second you have a place where Jews live, they have to set aside a place where they all gather there for prayer. That's by definition of a shul. What's the halacha? Open up the Rambam. The Jews have to have a place that's designated as their place for gathering in this city, in this town. Place of gathering for prayer in place of the temple. We don't have a temple here, so the temple by definition. Okay, let's go on. Beidu amru, we can't go on such big tangents. Beidu amru, makdimin velo me'achrin. With regard to these dates of Purim, we say you will precede Purim, you will make it earlier, but you will not delay. And Moshe reminded us that we have to wonder, are these two halachot or one? My taima. What does my taima mean?
What's the reason?
Okay, so we will go with that definition for now. That my taima means what's the reason. But we will bear in mind that my taima sometimes means what's the source. And my taima sometimes means something else. My taima. Amar Rebbe Abba Amar Shmuel. Rebbe Abba quoted Shmuel. Shmuel explained, Amal Kra, the verse says, Velo Yavor. These are the dates of Purim and they shall not pass. The simple understanding is, this is an institution that will be with the Jewish people for eternity. It will not pass. Our sages had a tradition to understand from this verse, Velo Yavor, do not pass go, right? He has no monopoly, do not pass go. Do not pass this day. Well, if I cannot pass this date, and that date falls out on Shabbat, so I cannot fulfill the date, what's my default choice? I have to proceed. So now, when our Mishnah says, with regard to Purim, that I must proceed and I may not delay, you explain that. Is that two halachot or one? You explain it to me, what we just learned. Think, you don't have...
Two halachot.
Explain it. You explain. I'm listening.
What is it teaching us? We have to proceed. We're learning too. We're turning. What is proceed telling us? Okay. Proceed and not delay.
I don't need you to explain to me the Mishnah. I want in your own words. We just learned. The Gemara said an answer.
Okay. I'll say my own
answer. So in your own words, what did the Gemara just tell? Are you comfortable or you're on the spot? I know you're on the spot, but are you comfortable being on the spot?
I'm comfortable on the spot. I don't know if I have the answer.
You want to think for a minute?
I'm going to do it.
Okay, go. Yeah.
Now, before, the saying that we can go before is teaching us the laws of Shabbat. That if it falls on Shabbat, that thus we have to go before. That we can go after is teaching us the law of that we cannot let this opportunity to pass. That it's teaching us low Yahweh.
Huh? Did you see that in the Talmud? It's a nice idea, but I didn't see it in what we read. So now, let me tell you, there are two types of people who learn Talmud. And I'm going to use a gentle language. No, not because of you. You're okay, you're starters. But you have to know where you're headed. There are people who learn Talmud, and they read a few lines, they semi-understand them, and then they pick up their head and say, gee, I wonder what that said. And then they think. And then they invent. And they could be very original and very interesting and have nothing to do with the truth. Then there are the people who learn Talmud and their head is always in the Talmud. Because they're saying, what did that say? And what did that say? And what did that say? Wait a second, what does it say here? And they also think, but their thoughts are bound to the text. And the difference is, one is really thinking, gee, I wonder what thoughts will dawn on me. What is this telling me? And the other one is saying, what is it telling me? Let me read each word. Let me see what it's telling me. You're okay. You're just starting. But you should know, whenever you're learning, you have to gauge yourself vis-a-vis the text. What did it tell me? Is that there or not? Very often I'll tell my chavruta, my learning partner, I'll tell him, that's a beautiful idea. Now show me which word said that. Where does it say that? I like the idea. I buy into it. Tell me, what religion is it? I don't know. But in the Talmud, I don't see it. So it's a beautiful idea. Great. We got to work with the text. So I don't mean this about you, but it's an opportunity to say, guys, you have to know this. This is a critical point. Now, let's work with the text. You correctly pointed out, the Talmud says, Elo Yavor. You correctly pointed out that we seem to have two laws in the Mishnah. So far, we're together. The Gemara asked, what's the source? What was the Gemara's answer?
Elo Yavor.
Yeah. Which means, what do we say?
That it cannot pass.
Okay, so now, take the next steps. I'm listening. I don't want to talk, I want you to talk.
So I have to go inside the door. I can't just think of this. So now I'm Rabbi Abba,
No, that's already in next Gemara. Elo Yavor is the end. That's it. So what did they tell me? Let's begin with what we assumed when we read the Mishnah. We both assumed the same thing. We said, the Mishnah said, proceed, do not pass, right? And then when the Talmud asked for a source, the Talmud said the source is, you shall not pass. That's what the Talmud answered. The Talmud said, the verse says, do not pass. Okay, so what is the Talmud in effect telling me?
It seems to be saying, I'm only giving one.
Right. Explain, I'm listening.
Which means you can't pass.
And why do I proceed? Is it its own halacha, or is it just because you can't pass and you can't do on Shabbos, so what are you left with?
That's my logic.
Right, okay, but let's see it inside. The Talmud asked the question, the Talmud answered, the answer is, it says don't pass.
Okay, don't pass.
Okay, so then what's the Talmud telling you technically?
Saying that you have to go forward.
You have to. If it falls out on Shabbos, do you read on Friday because there's a point in reading on Friday, or is it just because you can't pass Shabbos and it fell out on Shabbos?
Because you can't pass the date, and because you can't read on Shabbos, and thus you have to read before.
Oh, so is it two separate halachot or one? Okay, so tell me, what is...
We're learning both. We're learning, yes, you can pass. And you can't pass, stomach. You can't pass. And because of Shabbat, you have to go forward.
So there's like two instances of Shabbat
I'm
and...
I'm saying, but is the idea of makdimin, of go back to Friday,
is it something completely
is that its own thing, the way we read it in the Mishnah? Or is it just a derivative of the fact that you can't pass?
It's a derivative of the fact that we can't read on Shabbos.
You're right. It's a derivative of both of those. But my point is, when we read the Mishnah, we read the words makdimin as though they were their own halacha. You proceed. Halacha one. Two, do not pass. The Talmud answered me and said, no, there's one halacha. Do not pass. By default, you'll have to proceed. But it's not two separate entities. When we read the Mishnah seemingly told me two. When we hit the Talmud gives me a source for one. I understand from that the other one is a derivative. We could understand that logically. If I can't pass, well, okay, then I got to go back, right? I don't have a choice. But it's derivative. It's not its own entity. You guys with me?
Yeah, but I have
okay,
a question.
Okay, now, wait, give me one second. So why did I make this all shebang? A, so we should notice this in the Talmud. B, because just because that's the Talmud's answer about this halacha in the Mishnah, does not mean that for the next halachot in the Mishnah, it will be the same answer. With every answer, the Talmud's going to ask, and what about this law? When we said we gave a list of five things in the Mishnah, some you proceed and don't go forward, some you go forward and do not proceed. And about each one, the Talmud's going to give me an answer, and about each one, I'm going to have to ask, wait a second, is one the derivative of the other? I can't go back, so I guess I go forward. I can't go forward, so I guess I go back, like we said here. It's a derivative. Here it's one. Will it be that way for all five? Let's see. Stay tuned. But at least now I understand the Talmud better. Yeah? Look, my point here is not this Gemara.
No.
We're learning Shas. I want you guys to have tools to learn all of Talmud. Yeah. So that's our goal. Okay, that's why I'm spending time on these points that might seem small. As you learn, you'll see they're huge. Okay, go ahead.
Because we made the observation in the Mishnah that it could have two possible halachas, and we were working on that assumption when we were reading the Gemara, when do we know that, say, this one, for instance, this one maybe only had one, but how do we know that this one only went and we're not missing something?
You don't. You don't. So that's why you have to be modest as you learn and say, okay, right now what I see is that it's one. Let me keep learning. Let's see. You know, the way I explained to you the Mishnah is a product of a question I had for about 7 years. And then I hit a Rashi somewhere in a different tractate that explained this Mishnah. So I explained to you the Mishnah. After 7 years of questioning, I got to that answer. The way I explained to you the Mishnah we learned today in Beitza was a product of about 15 years I had a question on that Mishnah. I'm telling you, true. I shelved the question. I said, I don't know. That's why I took the time to explain to you the whole concept of Ushmartem is Mishmarti, a question I had on a Rashi in the beginning of Beitza. And En Shvut Mimikdash, a question on a tractate in Zvachim. And the whole concept of Shvut, a question on a Rashi in Rosh Hashanah. When I learned the Mishnah with you, so I put together questions which I had, gave you the finished product. You guys now have a clear picture of the Mishnah. But that clear picture came from years of saying, well, maybe this means this, and maybe this means that, and I don't know. Let's see, as I learn more, I'll understand more. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to get used to being modest and saying, okay, from what I see here, this is the answer. Maybe I'll see more and I'll have a better answer. Right now I see it's one. One is the derivative of the other. Maybe I'll turn the page and the Gemara will give me another reason and I'll see it's not a derivative. Maybe that could happen. For now, this is what I have. But you're right. We have to recognize that we just saw a few lines. There could still be a whole lot out there on this topic. But as you go on, you'll start getting a feel for which topics will be broad and which topics are probably limited to here. And this is one of them.
Okay.
It's more likely that it's limited to here. Don't forget.
You get enough from getting a feel though from studying a lot of them and over time.
Right. And don't forget, we're not learning Rashi. We're not learning Tosfos. We're reading Gemara. I mean, this is very, very superficial learning. We're getting a lot of knowledge out of it and a lot of tools out of it. But this is just the beginning. As you guys get more proficient, we'll be able to start learning Rashi and see what we're supposed to see in Rashi. A lot of this you also have to notice as you read Rashi. Okay, slowly, one step at a time. We're starting. Okay. Now, are we all together? Yes, gentlemen, we're all together. Okay. Once we quoted one quote that Rabbi Abba taught us in the name of Shmuel, we go on to quote other quotes. Ve'omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Shmuel. Minayin shein monin yamin leshanim. Where do I know that when I have to calculate years in halacha, I don't bother calculating dates? A guy says, I swear I won't drink wine for a year. He's standing today, what is it? I don't know. Let's say he's standing on the 10th day of Cheshvan, and he says that. So we wait till next year, the 10th of Cheshvan, and then he's permitted. He says, wait, but on the solar calendar you have another 11 days. You know, the lunar calendar is 354 versus 365 on the lunar calendar. It's not really the same day. They say, buddy, don't bug us. We don't calculate days when we're calculating years. You said a year is this date next year. Finish. How do we know that? Minayin, from where? What's the source? She'in monin yamim lashanim, that we don't calculate days when we're calculating years. Shenemar, as the verse says, lechodshei hashana, to the months of the year. When the pasuk describes the year, it says, this is the first month to the months of the year. So we see chodashim atamon el shanim, that when we speak about years, we speak about months vis-a-vis years. V'atamon yamim l'shanim. We don't speak about days vis-a-vis years. When we talk about a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we talk about the day of the month. We talk about this date in 5 years. We don't talk about days. We don't calculate days. Clear? ורבנן דקיסרי משום רבי אבא אמרו, the rabbis in Kesari said in the name of Rabbi Abba, what does the word Mishum mean?
Because
in the name of as well. We said it yesterday, Mishmei. Mishum, Mishmei, at the top of the page. Rabbi Yehuda, son of Rashmo Bar Shelat, said in the name of Rav.
Not directly, but...
Good for you, right. He said, whenever it says Mishum or Mishmei, it means in the name of, but he didn't hear it directly. Okay? We'll confuse this a little bit more after you guys get used to this. You know, we build and then we break and build again. But first we got to get used to this. So Mishum or Mishmei means in the name of. So the rabbis of Kesari said in the name of Rabbi Abba, Minayin shem mechashvin sha'ot lechodashim. How do you know that when you're evaluating months, you don't evaluate hours? A guy says, I won't drink wine for a month. We don't say, well, wait, you said it yesterday at 3 and now it's 2. No, we say, you go by days, you know. He said, for a month is 30 days. 30 days are up. It's up. You don't go by hours. Because the verse says, shenemar, as the verse says, ad chodesh yamim, tell a month of days. Yamim atam chashev l'chodeshim, to indicate to us that when you calculate months, you calculate by days. V'yatam chashev shot l'chodeshim, but you don't calculate hours when you're calculating months. Clear?
Yeah, you just do the one time period down.
Didn't say that.
Not two.
That's the bottom line. Okay. The Talmud did not say that. Quite the contrary. The Talmud seemed to say, I need a verse for this. My own logic wouldn't do it. And you're right, it's a good way of remembering it. But don't confuse that with saying that's the logic behind it. I agree with you. I would say like you. But it doesn't say that.
Yeah,
Why is all this important? Because our next question is going to be, well, wait a second. What's the minimum time that exists in halacha? As far as the Torah is concerned, to what point does the Torah take things? Does the Torah talk about seconds, minutes, hours? And I'll have you know that this is not discussed in Talmud directly. It is a machlokas. It's a machlokas chazonish and Rav Yonah Sanayipshitz. It's a machlokas that was discussed in the last few centuries. It's not so clear. Biblically, what's the minimum amount of time that the Torah discusses? So you're going to find areas in halacha where it's not one down. That's why it's important to remember. The Talmud asked a question and quoted a source. The Talmud didn't say, well, logically you go one time frame lower. Okay, back to the Gemara. Okay, instead of doing the next Gemara, we'll fill in a blank we left in the Mishnah, and then we'll pick up here next week. The Mishnah said, one of the things that gets delayed and not proceeded is Zman HaTzei Kohanim Va'am. He said that's the time that the Kohanim would donate wood. So let's define that a little bit better. In the time of the beginning of the Second Temple, so we had Koresh, Queen Esther's son, Jewish boy, king of Persia, not living a very Jewish life. And the Jews come and ask him, we'd like to go and build the temple and go back to the land of Israel. And his mother says, son, do it. This is your chance. Go ahead. Give him permission. So he listens to his mother and he says, I'll fund it. Go build and bring sacrifices that I should be successful. And he sends the Jews. And the Jews say, we have it so good in this Persian Empire. We're wealthy. We have mansions, we have Brooklyn, we have Borough Park, Persia, we're doing good out here, why should we go to Israel? So they don't go. And the chief rabbi Ezra tries to get everyone to go, they don't listen. He only gets people he can threaten. And he comes to the land of Israel, and he's halfway there, and he sees he has no Levites. No Levim are coming. How's he going to do the temple service? He doesn't have Levim. He checks and he checks. He has no Levim. So they come back and they rebuild the temple and they're in pretty dire straits. And they don't even have enough wood to bring sacrifices. And the verse records in Ezra that when they rebuilt the second temple, so there were some old people there who remembered the first temple. Some of the young ones, they were so excited, they have a temple, they're blowing their trumpets and they're rejoicing, there's this huge inauguration party. The young ones are rejoicing and their grandparents are standing there weeping. And in all the noise, no one noticed that all the old people were weeping. Because the old people looked at it and thought, this is a temple? We remember what the first temple looked like. This is a temple? And things were pretty tough financially. So they arranged, they asked, and people donated wood. They didn't have enough wood. And different families donated, covered the wood that was necessary for the temple different times throughout the year. And then, when we became really wealthy and the Jews got settled financially, the rabbi said, those families that stood by the temple, when we needed it, when we didn't have the money, we're going to honor them. And for the rest of the period of the temple, they were granted a holiday for that family on the day that they donated. And they would come up with the whole procession, the family would come up and donate. And we have Mishnayos and Tanis that describe, this date is this family's holiday. This date is this family's holiday. The rabbis instituted holidays for those families. And they would have set times when they would go up and donate the wood for the temple. And then Zman HaTekoanim, the time of the donation of the wood for the Kohanim service in the temple, where these families throughout the period of the second temple, for those centuries, they had set dates throughout the year where different families would come and donate wood again. This time not because we needed it, but because it was an honor to them that they were allowed to donate the wood now that no one needed it, just because they stood by the temple when the temple needed it. So those dates that were given to those families, what happens if they fell out on Shabbos? Says the Mishnah, that's one example of something which we would delay and not perceive. So that's what the Mishnah calls Zman HaTekoanim Va'am, the time that the wood was donated to the Kohanim in the nation. Zman HaTekoanim Va'am, that line in the Mishnah, that's the time that the Kohanim would donate, these families would donate the wood to the Kohanim in the nation throughout the period of the Second Temple.
Okay.
We'll have to